Nini Tanzillo lead us in the flag salute.
Let's pray. Father, we thank you, Lord, for, again, our city and our city leaders. Father, forgive us when we fail you. Lord, help us to look to you for wisdom. Father, we thank you for our leaders who, many of them, volunteer their time for our city council, our mayor, Lord, their families, city manager, city attorney, Lord, all the various departments, police and fire, Lord, bless them, and our staff, Lord. Father, just bless everyone here. Much to talk about. We pray that we just have an open heart, an open mind. Father, we do want what's best for Grover Beach. Lord, thank you for this opportunity to do the business of Grover Beach. We also want to continue to pray for our military, Father, and we pray for a quick resolve. And we thank you for all that you do for us and all that you provide for us. We pray these things in your name. Amen.
Thank you, Pastor Gil.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Nini. At this time, we'll have roll call, please.
Here.
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 Mayor Arnson.
Here. Thank you, Donna. Okay, we will report on closed session announcements. On July 21st, 2003, after meeting in closed session regarding one, conference with labor negotiator, and basically the represented employee group was the SEIU, or the general employees, and two, conference with legal counsel, the pending litigation, Jensen versus the City of Grover Beach, three, conference with legal counsel, pending litigation, Ward versus the City of Grover Beach, and four, public employee performance evaluation, employee city manager. The council reconvened into public session. No reportable action were taken in closed session, and the city council meeting was adjourned. Let's see. Ceremonial calendar, we have nothing on it today. Public communications, anyone in the in the public that would like to speak to the council on an item that's not on the agenda for three minutes or less, please step forward and do it right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor, and the members of the City Council. I'm a little bit nervous at that ID. How can I start? You know, it's really hard.
Would you be kind enough to give us your name and address, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Nini Tanzillo, and I live at 1814 Alma Court in Grover Beach. My son, Dino, is a Special Olympian, and due to an accident, and every year at this time, they do a fundraiser. And we've been on our feet for 4 weeks in a row out there, business to business to business to people to doctors to lawyers to whatever. And I stood at the stop sign coming this way, and I says, I'm stopping at the City Hall. So, which I did. Special Olympics, we don't get any money from the government's programs from going underneath. And this year, knowing me, I'm out to break that record because I know how bad Special Olympics needs the money. And I'm all asking you to dig in. I've asked Ron already. I'm asking you to just kind of dig in your pockets and give what you can. If you write out a check, make it out to Special Olympics. And the deadline is Wednesday. And I can't wait, but my husband, he's a volunteer for Special Olympics. He volunteers softball and golf, which Dino has won the silver and the gold medal in golf. And next year, he tells me he's going for the gold, and I believe him. And, you know, this is very hard to do, but I think anyone would do it for their son. And that's exactly what I'm doing and helping him because he loves it so much. And these have become his friends and his way of getting sports and what he used to do, he does now. Dino, step up here for a minute.
While Dino's coming up here, I must remind the audience here and at home that this family is the one almost who started our Christmas lights in December, and they're the ones that made Grover Beach, put them on the map for the Christmas lights.
Oh,
we want to thank you for that.
Thank you, Dee Dee. But this is my son, Dino. And Dino, we can't waste any more time. But I know they said 3 minutes, but I could go on and on when it comes to this.
Yeah.
But deadline is Wednesday. But my husband says I could have a leeway because the bash is until the 16th. I could have until Friday. If you people want to get together or tonight, write me out a check, or I can give you my phone number. I will take cash. Special Olympics has given out their tax ID license number. So my number is 481-8729 and also 550-7232. And you can contact us there. Okay? Thank you so very much for listening to me, and I really appreciate it. And my son appreciates it, but most of all, Special Olympics does too.
Nene, might want to mention that when they have their Special Olympics, it's held here in Arroyo or sometimes in Atascadero and the different areas. It's not just here. It's throughout
this
county.
It's for the San Luis Obispo County.
Exactly.
Right, exactly. And we use the Little League what are those fields down
Soda
here?
Field?
Yes.
Soda Complex.
Yes. That's where we have. No.
No. We use the city.
The Mentone?
Yes, the Mentone.
Mentone or 16th Street?
Yeah.
Any one of those?
And that's where we hold our practices every week for softball. And that's awfully nice of the city to let us use that. So I thank you again. What can I say? But thanks a million for listening.
Very good.
Thank you. And good luck, Dino.
Thank you.
Bring home the gold.
Okay. All right. Like I say, I'm pretty busy. I got some things on four legs, and that's my job. And I was trying to get them situated so I could go to sale last week, and I got down to house in Grand and didn't have my phone. And so I went back home to turn Oak Park on Brighton. There's a four-wheeler off-road. Baseball cap on backwards. Young kid speeding down Brighton from Oak Park 16th. And as he came back, I told him to get that damn thing off the road, street. And as I got to my driveway, the four little girls next door, my two granddaughters, their mother is out in the front. He had come across my driveway, across the yard. Almost got two little girls. Came really close. So I wasn't there. Mother said that to me. My wife. And so he went, lived somewhere between me and Oak Park on a flag lot back there. And so I was really upset. So I called the man that is in charge of the city. And I got his pup. And she put me on hold. And I said, this is important. We almost had some girls hurt badly up here. I want to talk to the CEO, Mr. Anderson. She put me on hold and then says that you better call the police department. So I did. Well, the first person there, I don't know his name, didn't know too much, out to lunch. And then the lieutenant came on and I told him the situation. So what is the motorcycle? Well, it was in an accident 4th of July. Now, you know that thing has been out of order more than it has been on the streets. And it's this is sad because you people, like I said last time, we've come close to the red so many times, but you insist on spending money foolishly, unnecessarily, wildly. But here is a motorcycle. Should be out on the streets. And that kid is on probation. So I was told by a neighbor. And what is our police force doing about it? What is our council? What is our city doing? So on Monday morning, I got a call. Mr. Anderson. Yes, sir. And right in behind comes his twin. city attorney. You know, for 40-some years, city, government. I've taught the city management. And I don't bother nobody, even the council. I did call to you, and I got no return. But that's to be expected. You're so busy. And here's city attorney getting on to me about a little girl, a puppet, that couldn't take the message. That really bothers me because I do that so many times on the phone. You get these puppets. The people that you should be talking to won't talk. And so finally, we hung up. And 2 days later, a lady down the street told me that the little boy's mother works away. And he's home by himself. Little 13, 14-year-old girl comes down from San Luis on a scat bus. People want to do about this, but I would confiscate it. And I'd put the kid back on probation or do something to him. Because we don't need that in that neighborhood. We need and a motorcycle. I just don't understand. When I borrow something, I try to take care of it. When I rent something, I try to take care of it. And we don't have no backup. And then I was told on a conversation, we don't have insurance. Well, everybody has to have insurance to drive out here on the street. Why don't you? Why don't we? That's all, you know, taxpayers. So, you don't want me to say nothing. Take care of business, and I won't come up here.
Well, Mr. Weissong, this council has no more responsibility or action on an issue like that than you do. It's up to our police department, and I don't know what they did when they went out there, but it's in their hands, and until something... and there's not a lot we can do at this point. And that's true, but I wasn't elected as a police officer. I'm elected as a elected official, and I make decisions here, as all of the other people sitting in this DS do, on a as far as policy decisions. We are not made. We are not elected to come to your house and see tracks in the street or anything like that. So that's the police department's issues. And we're as out of it as you are in that issue, in those issues. Well, I don't have a badge. No one up here has a badge. That's the police department's job. And if you think that we're spending money falsely or bad, in we're making mistakes spending money, this DS is welcome to have another body up here. Throw your name in the hat, run for council, and quit calling us names. And we're doing the best we can. Everybody up here has the same attitude. We're trying to do the best thing we can for our community. And if you don't like it, get rid of us. Run for election next time and get rid of all of us. But we're doing the best damn job we can. Yes, sir.
Yeah, but
Mr. Mayor, honorable council members, I spoke to Mr. Weissong on the day in question, and apparently he had returned home after this had occurred. Some time period had passed. Immediately sent several officers into the area, along with an Arroyo Grande officer who was in the area. We checked it for several minutes. We periodically came back over the next several hours and checked and did not locate the juvenile in question. This is the first I'm hearing that the people in the neighborhood know who the juvenile is. If that information is passed on to the police department, we're more than happy to follow up on it. The four-wheel drive vehicle in question was actually a four-wheel drive ATV type vehicle. It's not a large truck; it's just a huge thing. It's still inexcusable what happened, and if we have the information, we're more than happy to follow on it. Like we tell people when they call, please call us when it's occurring. Don't wait 15 minutes. Don't wait an hour. Don't wait several days to call us because there's not much we can do about it. What's not happening in our presence.
Thank you, Lieutenant Thomas. Any other public communications?
Ron, I would just like to piggyback. I don't think any of our staff has to be working in our city and be called a puppet, nor do I think anybody should be called a twin. That is totally degradable to anyone. Everybody is a professional.
Okay. It looks like we can do voice vote with all of those. So may I have all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed or any opposed? Motion's passed. We'll go back to number two. Dave, I guess you're going to...
Yes. The minutes of June 16th, both the City Council Improvement Agency joint meeting and the regular City Council meeting. That was when the final reading and discussion of the budget and then adoption of the budget. And it was 6 weeks ago, so it's some time has passed, but I have to explain a little bit a vote that I did there. Our system doesn't allow for mistakes. I made a mistake in voting on that. I'd like to explain it. I can't ask to have it revote on it. But all I can do is have it read into the minutes now what my intent was, and hopefully that will cover it. And to explain it, on the first part of the discussion was the joint city council improvement agency meeting. We discussed the budget, the motion to approve the budget was made and seconded and voted on, and D and I voted no on that in the improvement agency city council joint meeting. We voted against the budget. It did pass, and we immediately adjourned to the regular city council meeting, and then we immediately voted on the consent agenda for the regular city council meeting. On the city council meeting, one of the items is the approval of the budget. Well, whenever I'm looking at the meetings we have, I flag any issues that I want to pull from the consent agenda. I didn't pull that particular approval of the budget because I expected to be voting in favor of it. But in fact, I did not vote in favor of the budget as presented in the Joint City Council Improvement Agency meeting. But I did vote in favor of it by mistake on the consent agenda. Am I making sense to everybody?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's no way to pull that back. I was not in favor of approving this year's budget. And the reason I explained, was basically we're spending down a reserve much more than I agreed with. But I can't pull that back. And it doesn't change the final outcome of the vote. It's just that in times we've liked to have explained and been able to justify our actions. And this is one time that I was thinking, this is the first time in 13 years I'm voting against a city budget. I've always been very proud of supporting things. This one I did not approve of, but I was thinking I'd already voted against it. And so. Yeah. So anyway, I'm explaining this so that it's in the minutes now, even if it is 6 weeks later, that there was an error on my part. Later in that same meeting, when we adjourned the city council meeting and put on it, unless you're part of the winning side or some, whatever the rules are. But so anyway, I think I said enough. I would like to just have the minutes today reflect that I was not in support of this year's budget and wanted to vote against it and voted in favor in error. Thank you.
Yes, Steve.
Two things. First, this is really bothering Dave, so I'm looking for some consensus. If we have him do 25 push-ups right now. I'd rather have the push-ups. And the second thing was...
I don't see any fire personnel. I don't think we should do the 25 push-ups. There's no fire personnel in the room. I think we're going to be doing CPR.
Okay, and more seriously, I was absent from the meeting of July 21, and I'll be abstaining from voting for their approval.
Okay. Anybody else?
No, I just wanted to maybe add on, Dave, your intentions were certainly outlined in a joint meeting, and hopefully the city clerk got that, because I think if she refers back to that, I think we all understood what you intend to do that evening.
Thank you. With that, I would make a motion that we approve the item 2 consent agenda.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion passes. Okay, we'll go to public hearings. Request for authorization to circulate the draft stormwater management plan and solicit public comments. And our staff report will be by Murray Wilson. Is that right?
The Murray Wilson.
Staff Murray assistant Wilson. Murray Wilson.
That is me. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and City Council.
As you mentioned, this is a request for your authorization of the circulation of this draft stormwater management plan. This plan comes from 1972, the background of it. The Federal Clean Water Act, also known as the Clean Water Act, established regulations for the discharge of pollutants into the stormwater and from a point source or any other source. And if they had this discharge, it has to be covered under the National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit. This original permit covered large cities with populations over 100,000. In 1987 and in 1990, later amendments to the Clean Water Act established regulatory background for smaller cities. This area of the permit, which is known as the MPDS Phase 2 permit, is what we are going to futurely be covered under. Municipalities categories under the Phase 1 program were required to implement a stormwater management plans in order to control pollutants in their stormwater system. In 1999, the EPA issued orders for us, cities of greater than 10,000 and other cities in that category, to also have to meet the requirements of the Clean Water Act. With those requirements, the city will be required to submit a notice of intent to comply with their requirements of the permit. They will also be required to submit a stormwater management plan, which is attached with this packet. And these requirements are going to be due to be submitted to the Regional Water Quality Control Board by the end of October of this year, that are intended to reduce the levels of pollutants in our stormwater discharges from our storm sewer system into the natural waterways. Also, with this program, a monitoring and compliance program is required, and also an annual report documenting what has been done for the year previous and any improvements and modifications the city deems necessary. So as I said, it's the intent of this MPDS Phase 2 rule to reduce the impacts of pollutants into aquatic habitats of our local natural waterways. Common pollutants include pesticides, herbicides, fertilizers, oils, detergents, sediment from construction sites, litter, and other debris. Another concern is a possible illicit connection of sanitary sewers into the storm drain system. These could be accidental connections at one point. They could be any number of ways that this system is interconnected. If these pollutants aren't taken into consideration, numerous harmful effects can happen to the environment. There can be fish kills, loss of wildlife habitat, pollution to the ocean and our natural waterways. The city must develop, implement, and enforce the stormwater management plan, which is enclosed in this packet, which is designed to reduce the discharge of pollutants into our storm sewer system to the maximum extent practicable. The maximum extent practicable allows for varying levels of depth into the program. It notices that all cities do not have the same funding sources to achieve the same sorts of goals. The maximum extent practicable relays back to the city and its position, its unique conditions with the environment, and other situations that by achieving stormwater quality to the maximum extent possible, it's really an objective thing that is going to be reviewed by the Regional Water Quality Control Board to see if we are actually doing the most that we can at our level. The stormwater management plan must include 6 minimum control measures, best management practices, and measurable goals to be achieved during the program term. The following 6 minimum control measures are addressed in this stormwater management plan. The city must develop a public education outreach program to help educate the public and get them on track of what we are doing with this stormwater management plan. Encourage a public participation and involvement in pollution prevention. develop and implement a program which identifies and eliminates illicit connections to the city's storm sewer system. Implement stricter guidelines and enforcement actions to reduce runoff from construction sites. Implement stricter guidelines and enforcement actions to reduce runoff from existing developed sites. And implement a pollution prevention / good housekeeping practices for the city's municipal operations. The city will have 5 years to implement this program as you look at to when we develop this program. It will be used basically to see how we are doing as the years go through the program cycle, if we are meeting the goals that we anticipated. Some of the BMPs that have been selected and are contained in the stormwater management plan may be phased in over a several year period, such as the development of the storm sewer system map. If you were to look into the attachment, you will see under target date for activities, that storm sewer system map is proposed to be created over, I believe, 4 years and implemented in the last year. In reality, the development of these programs may actually occur in the beginning year as far as program compliance goes. It allows us to kind of have a little wiggle room in case we can't get everything accomplished in the first year. But we will be, many of the programs that are included will be addressed here in the first year and should be ready to be implemented when we do get around to that point 3 or 4 years down the road. A public comment period is not required for this portion of the MPDS program. However, the city is requesting this meeting be a public comment period so that we can authorize or so that we can get comments from the public and return back to you in late October with some either modified plan or as is, if there's no comments received. The reason being, this is not, as I said, it's not required by the regional board. Speaking with Jennifer Bidding, the key contact person for the MPDS program at the regional board, she basically mentioned that this would be looked upon well in their eyes, that the city is actually trying to solicit comments from the public and get the public involved. This is, as I read just a moment ago, will be considered part of the public education outreach program. So as of now, we're kind of getting our first steps into the program before it's actually adopted. Since this isn't a formal public hearing as far as the regional board is considered, they will be holding a formal public review, formal comment period, once we submit our draft to them. We are also required to submit a digital copy, and they will circulate the digital copy through their internet site for comments also, and that will be the official comment period. This plan was developed in coordination with City of Arroyo Grande and Pismo Beach. We originally were going to be a co-permit kind of team on this, but funding and different things that have unraveled since the program started, we decided that we're all going to have our own plan, and we'll be working on things such as the public education, the outreach sorts of things. We'll be sharing resources with these other agencies to help cut costs. The draft stormwater management plan will be available for review for anybody who wants to do that. The South County Regional Library, the Grover Beach Planning Department here in City Hall, the Administrative Service Department.
Report. So I don't really have a lot of questions, maybe just some clarification for the folks in the audience and at home. What's before us this evening is authorization to circulate this draft document. Is that correct?
Correct. We will be coming back to City Council in late October for the adoption of this stormwater management plan after we receive any comments that the public has.
And that's a 45-day review period?
We are going to do a 45-day review period, and then that will give me a little bit of time to put together the next staff report and make any alterations that need to be made to the plan.
And any comments should be directed to you?
Correct.
All right. Okay. You had kind of touched on this before with regard to circulating, and it's not a mandate, or it's not mandatory that we circulate this, but staff has chosen to circulate this for to allow the public input now?
Correct. We are kind of following behind the footsteps of other cities in the county who have already adopted their program. Gover Beach, Pismo Beach, and Arroyo Grande were given an extra 180 days to adopt for various reasons. I think I can't remember exactly what it was. It was either because population or being that it's a tourist. I think Pismo Beach was a tourist track. But anyways, we were given 180 extra days to adopt. So, sorry, say your question again. I lost my train of thought.
Well, I think you answered it. I think you answered the question. And the final question I had is, I think from the staff report we gather, you know, I know you had outlined some alternatives, but the bottom line is that this is a mandate, and so we need to kind of follow this and send this out. Are there any consequences of us not taking any action this evening?
This evening, in particular, I would say no, but if we are not to adopt this program by, I believe, the 27th of October, then the city could face severe consequences for not being covered under the general permit. I believe violations of the permit can be subject up to, or violators of the general permit can be subject up to penalties not to exceed $27,500 per day. So I don't know exactly what that fee or that fine would be, but it could be up to $27,500 for not being in compliance with this permit.
Great. Thank you, Murray.
Dee, any questions?
Yeah. You said late October, and here it says scheduled to be presented to the City Council October 6th, and then submitted to the other board on the 27th.
You're correct. The presentation would be October 6th is when it's tentatively scheduled. October 27th is the deadline to have it submitted to the regional board with the notice of intent and our plan.
Okay. Since, correct me if this is wrong, but some of Arroyo Grande's, doesn't it come through our system in a sense?
Yes. Part of Arroyo Grande's runoff does end up coming through our jurisdictions, through Meadow Creek. So in a sense, it was also not just for the fiscal purposes of combining. We figured that we're all in the same geographic area, and that was another reason why we had been working together with Pismo Beach, Gover Beach.
Report.
Thank you.
Did a good job, and everyone else has echoed my concerns. Thanks.
I had a couple, Murray. One of them was the comment period was September 19th for public comments, and then you're going to present it to us for the first time October 6th. Is that enough time to review and adjust to any public comments?
We were assuming that yes, it would be. I think I could get my turnaround back in those couple of weeks after the comment period closes to accommodate any public comments that come in into the report and address them.
Great. I think it was a great idea to combine it with Pismo and Arroyo Grande also. Good job. To anything we can do together is to all of our benefit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I did see there's a cost to this, and the question of financing was $84,000 for the first year of this program with funding to be decided later. Aren't we going to develop some kind of a fee structure, and can that be reimbursed to the general fund?
What we have included in the budget, what the council has appropriated, is a enterprise fund like the water fund or the sewer fund that would be user fee supported. What we're saying in the short run is that the general fund is going to subsidize this enterprise activity until such time as the plan is adopted and it has been formed. And we have included in the budget, as you'll recall, a user fee study for enterprises to give council information about what the appropriate and defensible fee structure is. Council may recall that I believe it was a city in the Bay Area that had established user fees for this kind of activity, and they ended up being taken to court and losing. So we want to make sure that however that is structured, that it's consistent with state law and with the local intentions.
But you can be reimbursed retroactively for the cost up front.
Yes.
Okay. This example of an unfunded mandate, you know, if we need any more, here's another one. There was a question, actually one comment first. Every time you talk to the public, you need to really emphasize this is storm sewers. It's all of this doesn't go into our sewer system. I think that's going to be a very common misunderstanding. So in big letters somewhere it needs to be. I know it is the water runoff going down the streets, but I think the people are going to, when they see sewer, they think of the Oceano plant. It doesn't go there. So, one of your issues on page 15 was of the actual draft. Takes 4 years to write a grading ordinance. 25% per year for the. Is that true? And I wonder why isn't that something that we can just write and implement?
This the portion of when I was speaking in the staff report about some of the programs are shown in these target date for activities in that right. table. To be implemented over this one, as you pointed out, a four-year period. Many of these portions of the program have actually been considered to get done early as opposed to not get done in the time that we set out to do it in.
It just seemed like a new construction plan could be fairly simple to design and implement, and so why take 4 years to...
And most of these things we have run over with the city engineer, and I believe it's our understanding that he probably will be accomplishing most of these things within the first year or two at one time, not at 25% intervals, like you said.
Perfect. Thank you. The other thing was how are you going to address the people that develop a retention basin on their property and receive their final building permit and then fill in the basin, and then the runoff from the home now becomes street runoff to the street.
I guess that could be addressed by when we develop a procedures for public information to be taken in on these issues. It could be a complaint driven thing. Hopefully we can make it a little more proactive, but at this time I really haven't thought of that issue too much. Okay.
I see it occasionally happening, and so it does occur around here where somebody's front yard is actually their ponding basin, but all of a sudden it becomes flat. Or
the actual permit won't be that focused on such a small lot.
Okay.
We will be requiring developments to install those as part of the overall plan. And we already do require those as part of, I believe, the city standards and specifications.
Right.
But as far as the main focus of this is for the construction sites that are disturbing an acre or greater of land. So the focus from the regional board won't be on these small areas. That will be more of our responsibility. So that will be something that will need to be developed during the program term.
Very good. Thank you.
Dee, you have another question?
Yeah. On here, you said contractors will be informed of training opportunities. How are we going to make sure that they do go through the training and so forth?
There really is no way for us to make sure that they do it. Our effort will be to inform the contractors of these opportunities and give them the opportunity to do this because they are the ones eventually that will be responsible potentially for discharges of sediment from their construction site. So if something happens on their job, it's going to be to their benefit to actually, when we give them these opportunities to go to these learning meetings and what training meetings to actually do it, because they'll be the ones responsible in the long run.
Now, is this another thing that maybe the Blue Ribbon Committee has been informed of, and this is something that's going to be coming up?
We haven't dealt with this directly yet with the Blue Ribbon Committee. Because it's still a planning kind of act. It's still in the planning process, the development of the plan process. But certainly, because this is an activity where for the next 45 days we're inviting public comment, certainly any builder or contractor that could be potentially impacted by this. We would welcome their participation and interest in developing a plan that is functional.
It's focused this evening that they're just looking for authorization to circulate this document and no direct comments on this, and they will have an opportunity to respond to any comments during that 45 days and bring it back to this council. So hopefully we understood that.
Any other comments or questions of staff? I'd also like to echo to Murray a very nice job done, and I think this is the first time you made a presentation to the council, and very good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
One of the things that you had mentioned with Dee is that you thought that the education with the public schools may be something that they could use to stencil storm drains. I'm going to think that I'm going to go back about 6 or 7 years, and I believe there's a Neptune Society. I'm not sure if that's right.
Was it Surf Rider?
Surf Rider.
Surf Rider. Okay,
not
Surf
Neptune.
Rider. Okay.
Yeah. That's a whole other issue about runoff.
That's another one? Okay. Okay. Well, that came to mind. Surf Rider. Okay, Surf Rider. Surf Rider asked for permission to stencil the drains 5 or 6, 7 years ago, or maybe it was when you were first on here.
They did.
But so we might contact them again and see if it's time to have the drain stenciled again. I don't have any other comments or questions, but this is a public hearing, so if the anybody in the public would like to speak to this item, please come forward and state your name and address. Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the council for this discussion and deliberation. And
I think we've discussed this far enough, so I'd like to make a motion that we authorize the circulation of the draft stormwater management plan and solicit public comments as outlined in staff's report this evening.
I just second that.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
All opposed? Same sign. Motion passes. We'll move into regular business. Proposed compensation for volunteer firefighters. And a staff report will be given by Chief Criswell.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members. Tonight we're going to discuss the Volunteer Firefighter Compensation Plan. The last few years during the budget period, I have been before you telling you of the challenges that we're having getting what we consider decent turnouts from our volunteers. And last year, you allowed us to start our provisional staffing program along with Oceano, and that has been working very well. But at the same time, our response from the volunteers other than that hasn't improved. In fact, it's gone down a little bit because they know that there's going to be an engine or a rescue responding with two personnel on right away. So at 2 o'clock in the morning, they don't feel the need to get up. So what we're proposing tonight is to change it over to a more performance-based incentives. Right now, what the volunteers get paid on a quarterly basis, they get a stipend for responding. They have to make 25% of the calls and 75% of the drills for the quarter. If they can't make that, then for that quarter, they get nothing. And so if their example up behind me there, and I think you have one in your packet also, and this is just one scenario. Say the department responds to 225 emergency calls for a three-month period and hosts 12 training sessions. Okay, if you're in the position of a firefighter, EMT, you make 25% or 56 of the emergency calls and 75% or 9 training sessions. Under the current stipend plan, you will receive $747. You need some?
Well, it's just getting warm in here. I thought maybe we could turn the air conditioning up a little bit.
Okay.
Sorry, Chief.
That's all right. Under the proposed plan, it would be 56 calls times $8 per call, 9 drills times $20 per drill equals $628. It's actually going to be a little less than they're making now under the current plan with a stipend, except right now we only have between two and three people that are actually receiving a stipend, and the rest aren't because they're not able to meet their required amount of calls. A firefighter, driver, operator, EMT, say he makes 16% or 36% of the 225 calls and 50% or six training sessions, under our current plan, he receives nothing. Under the proposed plan, if they make 36 calls at $9 per call and six drills at $20 per session, they'll make $444. And I can go all the way down if you'd like, but it's basically the same thing. Nobody is making really any more than they are under this program, except it's more of an incentive to get up and come down. And we really need, on structure fires, we need the response of the people to coming down. We need them at our training sessions. And we need them for backup, even on emergency medical calls. We're finding, and I think I've told you several times before, more and more we're responding on two and three calls at one time. So it's very important that we get the volunteers to come down to the station. And that's really difficult if you're doing it for nothing, just to come down to the station and maybe not go out on a call and then turn around and go home. We're also changing paying the on-call chief, which would be the officer in charge, division chief or captain, paying them per 12-hour call that they put in at night or on weekends, paying them $45 per call instead of just the stipend that they receive now. We're continually thinking of ways that we'd like to massage and tweak this to bring out the best in our personnel. And it does take a resolution from the City Council to make any changes like this. So that's why I'm before you tonight. The budget stays the same. It doesn't change. We might end up paying less than we are now. I rather doubt it. But I don't foresee going over the budget. If we do, that means the plan's a success and we're really getting a good response out of our people. As you can see, some get $2.50 a call, some get 12, 6, some get more for classes. I think CDF gives $40 for over 4 hours anytime they do training. We don't propose any of that, but this is just kind of a snapshot of what's going on in the county. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to try to answer them.
Questions? Mr. Eckbaum, I can tell you.
I think I'm going to wait. I'm glad to see this thing. I was going to complain about a fairly poor staff report. This comparison here helps, but it's really late for me to kind of look at. I just got it here now tonight. It also doesn't include our new partner, Oceano. And I think there's some comments I'd like to make later, but really no questions.
Okay. Dee? John?
No, I don't have any questions right now.
I'm striking out. Steve?
I have a couple. Chief, you had mentioned that the current policy is 25% call attendance and 75% drill attendance in the current system. In the proposed system, I'm a little concerned that I noticed in your scenarios of pay calculation that there's no longer a 75% drill attendance. Is that accurate?
No, there still is a 75% drill. If it's not in here, it should be.
In some of the scenarios, maybe that first slide, it showed an individual doing 50% of drill attendance and some percentage of call attendance, and he was still being, or she, not to be sexist, was being compensated. And I'm confused over that one. I think it's, you see where is it? The OIC EMT?
I think the reason for that is that it's a three-month period that the calculations were based on. So somebody could make 75% of the drills in 1 month and still be at the 75% level. But I think, as the chief was mentioning, that clearly what we're saying that the 75% of the drills per month is the minimum because we want folks to be trained and we don't want folks slacking off of the training.
I see what you mean. That's exactly right.
Right, and the reason it caught my eyes as I was reading was this was you're proposing a biweekly payroll processing for the paid call. I have no problem with that, but how do you calculate at the end of a quarter when you're calculating 75% drill attendance? Are you going to take money from people in the subsequent quarter that maybe we had paid all along through the quarter, and at the end of the quarter they're at 60% of drill? I mean, how are you going to manage that is one of my questions. It's just something that didn't quite jive with me when I was looking at it. Is that me with the feedback? No. Okay. That's probably a big in. And I'm glad to hear that you're committing to the 75% because I feel the community needs a guaranteed minimum level of service from our folks. And then, you know, we've talked about liability so much as a community recently, and I would hate for us to have something go upside down on a call where a patient the outcome wasn't successful, and then an attorney subpoenaed the community in litigation, said, I want to see the training records of personnel X, Y, and Z that were on that call, and we find out that they were at 50% of the drills. I mean, that just alarms me a little bit.
We do make up drills.
Right. So but I mean...
But they're not the same as a real right. drill.
I have a couple more. I definitely think we're at the point when you look at evolutions from other communities. PISMA, for example, that was a volunteer organization and then went to a paid call scenario like this where we're looking at potentially, I would think, changing the title. We're becoming a paid call firefighter or paid call fire department versus a volunteer fire department, and that's something we may want to throw around as well. And I'll hold out for now. Thank you.
I have a question, too.
Okay, John.
Chief, have you had a chance to ask the volunteers what they think of going to performance-based? Have you gotten any initial feedback, or are we just hoping that if we put this into play, we're going to improve?
Oh, no. We've fully discussed this with them, and that's one of the reasons we really are excited about it, because they're very excited about it.
Okay, thanks.
Well, I guess I had a couple questions, and I guess, as Dave has mentioned, I'm a little surprised that due to the fact that we're partnering up with Oceano, I'd like to see how their paid, whatever they do, stacks up against us, and whether it's working, because we're kind of in the same harness together. The other thing is on your compensation comparison throughout the county, it doesn't mention on here whether the other communities are paying for drill. They're just paying so much for call. Do they pay for drill also?
Right, training sessions
are
down through there.
Oh, okay.
And in answer to your question on Oceano, right now they're doing basically what we're doing with the program that we're under right now. And Chief Steinhauser saw this new program that I'm presenting to you tonight, and he's very excited, and we'll probably be going to his board with the same program.
Okay. I think that was. Oh, the other thing I was going to ask, and this probably is for Ron, does this become more of a onus upon our finance department to keep records and to pay people? Is this going to be another thing that we have to kind of be aware of? Is that
the primary staff impact of it, from what I can tell, is in the fire department more so than the administrative services department.
Okay, so that's basically reflects on the fire department secretary to be the person that's responsible for all the hours and everything, and then they just turn that into our staff at the finance department and get paid every 3 months, is it?
Well,
or would it be biweekly?
No, biweekly. They'll get this. They'll be paid the same as the rest of the city employees.
Okay. Any other questions, Dave?
I thought it was done. Now, right now, we often are responding to calls when Oceano is on duty because some of the firefighters want to make their commitment, make their time. So are we going to be paying on-call, pay call for people to respond when Oceano's on their 12-hour shift and are taking care of the problem?
Yeah, that's correct. Our people aren't responding because they want to get their money. They're responding because Oceano does the same thing in their community.
Understood. They often question why we were toning out our people when they're on call. and they're responding to our city.
Their
they can't understand. Why
their personnel do question that, and their chief has told them several times why they do it. For the same reason I'm telling you is because we need the personnel at the call, or we need them at the station for a secondary call. If we have Oceano all the way up here and there at Oak Park and Atlantic on a call, and we haven't called any of our people back, they're handling the call all by themselves, and they break a fire clear down on the bottom end of their area, I don't know what their alternative is. Are they going to leave our call or what they're going to do? So what we try to do is if we have the people available, we will respond to our own call. If we don't need them, we turn them loose. Or if we get on scene, we can release them, and then we stay because it is our call and it is our city. All this program does is guarantees that we're going to have two people in a unit respond on a call if they're not on another call. That's all it does. In no way is it anything but a Band-Aid.
And why did you go to this biweekly payroll rather than paying quarterly? Even if you went to this pay-per-call, why was it?
Finance said that that would be a lot easier for them. Am I correct? Okay, and you've...
Oh. I mean, that there is a concern about the qualifying number of training sessions and stuff that it seems to me is a real issue. And if you continued with the quarterly pay, even if it was pay per call, those kind of questions would be resolved.
Jack, currently we track response to emergency to emergencies as well as the drills that they have attend over a three-month period. But folks don't get paid over a three-month period, right? They get paid monthly?
No, they get paid quarterly.
Quarterly? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I had one more question. In the past, I know that a call was just making it to the station and signing up. Now, under this scenario, is a call leaving the station or is a call just being at the station? Because it would seem that, you know, it could be kind of expensive if 10 people show up at the station and they never leave the barn, they still get paid for showing up. So I don't know what our classification is going to be there. Is it going to be leaving the barn or just getting to the barn?
Getting to the barn, staying there until they're released by the on-scene personnel.
The other thing that I don't see in here, maybe I'm missing it, is that other agencies, do they have similar captains or division chiefs such that we do that are paid for staffing? I don't know if I'm missing that, because we have some division people that would be paid like $45 a call. Do these other agencies have staff people that are similar to what we have, as long as we're comparing them?
It doesn't appear that some of them do. I'm sure CDF does. Pismo Beach was CDF. They do.
Right.
Some have moved away. And
some have moved because they found housing and they can move their families to another community. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason.
But we're still in our quota, more or less.
Right. We're still bringing in volunteers. It's just hard to get them to respond to as many calls because a lot of them are working, or some of them are working ambulance, and like I said, other ones are working in other fire departments. And they just have lives, and they're becoming more hectic all the time. And while they like to respond on the calls, we are getting a unit out, so they know by coming down, they're basically a backup unless there's another call. And they just don't care to leave their families for that kind of thing, for nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's why.
Well, I know some of them are public assist or whatever. They're not so much accidents or fires or whatever, but it's just a public assist and so forth. So, okay.
Other questions? Yeah, this is a regular business item, and we don't. We're always welcome to ask. We always ask the public to put their comments in. So anybody that would like to speak to this item, please come forward and discuss it at this time. Seeing nobody, I'll bring it back to our council. Steve,
I had a few more. Thanks. I just wanted to see if we had any public input. Chief, is there going to be a minimum of 1 hour pay if they show for a call?
Right.
That'll be written into the policy?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, and Ron, you had brought that up earlier. When I left Grover Beach and went to Pismo for a short period, it was a one-hour minimum, but there were clear expectations. It wasn't fun to be left in the station, mm-hmm. but there were clear expectations that there were things to do.
You had to sweep up the building. Or
I was good at sweeping.
Get the hose, yeah. Whatever. Okay.
I don't have a problem with this type of incentive-based pay, but I have a problem, for lack of a better description, in being comfortable on how it's going to be managed, again, biweekly payroll versus quarterly training tracker, because I can see how there's going to be a potential glitch where at the end of the quarter we've been paying someone all along. We turn out that they didn't make their training requirements. So I don't think it's appropriate to go to someone who's counting on this money to say, well, you didn't make your training, so you owe us $350 in the next quarter, and we're going to take it out. So I'm not comfortable with that until we have more of a procedure, I guess, that explains how it'll be managed. I also feel that we should really be looking at calling folks paid call staff at this point, because it is incentive-based. And Dave, you had mentioned the staff report. I was reading the staff report, and I realized that the information that I think we'd all find really useful was in the original town hall meeting PowerPoint. I don't think it was shown, but it was Lynn compiled it months ago. So I asked the city manager to provide it tonight. I know it's short notice, but I think it's valuable to look at. And that's it. Thanks.
Mr. Mayor, if I could comment, the resolution that's before the council doesn't really deal with the periodicity with regard to when folks are paid. So the council could direct staff to look at monthly tracking or even quarterly tracking to ensure that folks have attended the appropriate number of drills for that portion of the payment. And you still could, if you're comfortable with the basis for the compensation.
Now, from what I've heard this evening, the chief is saying it isn't. I'm still not comfortable with that. I'm concerned that we keep doing these Band-Aid approaches and trying to provide a basic necessity to the residents of this community. And while I agree with what Councilman Lieberman said, that, you know, obviously we're going to pay per call, a lot of other communities are doing this, I'm glad that he provided this information, and I think we do need to see what Oceano is doing as well, because I'm trying to look through this evening, and I'm still not getting a comfort level. But I think long-term, and I think we really need to start talking in earnest about long-term solutions. I'm getting a little frustrated about these Band-Aid approaches and these little nibbles at a time. And so I know that's one of our goals. Let's get on it, and let's start talking in earnest about long-term solutions, whether it's a JPA, whether it is CDF. Let's do that. I think we owe it to this community. So I think that's my soapbox for the evening. And I believe at this point I'm not comfortable going forward with this. I think the city manager touched on this. Maybe we need to continue this item to allow them to study some of the questions that came up a little more in depth before and bring it back to this council.
Dave or Dee?
Go ahead, Dee. Nothing? I had a couple comments. One was I've asked at least five or six times for a list of the firefighters that are responding to calls, because I was afraid that there weren't many responding, and I've never gotten that list. And apparently this is why. There's very few firefighters that are responding, because either Oceana's on duty or somebody else is already there, so they don't have to. And so they're not receiving their stipends. So I think it'd be very easy to say that this will be at least within our budget, because our budget must be very low, because if we're not paying any of these 30 volunteers $220 a month, which is their stipend, there's a lot of money available there. I'm just afraid that the reverse is going to happen here. We're going to start getting a lot of people to respond to calls when they're actually just not needed, because we do have this joint Oceano Grover meeting. If there's an ambulance call, which most of the calls are, and two people respond, that's plenty. They're coming from Oceano. They're met there with the ambulance company. That's four people on site. If we have four or six or eight of our now paid volunteers responding to our station and standing there and then going home, I think it's a significant expense and of no benefit.
Well, yeah. I guess the thing that Steve brought up with you know, some kind of parameters there, where they if they do show up, then they're required to put in an hour at the station, whether it's sweeping up or doing the hose or whatever. I mean, maybe that would alleviate some of your concerns. I'm not sure, but
I just in the middle of the night, I just don't see eight guys here grabbing eight brooms and sweeping the floor. So I understand that we're trying to get our volunteers to. And so I think there's just some real unresolved issues here, and I'm not ready to vote for it either.
Dee?
That sounds sort of funny, Dave, when you say that, you know, we're not, nobody's responding, we're not paying anybody, there should be money there. Because, I mean, you see the truck out there, there is people responding stuff. So
I think it's two or three guys out of 30 guys. I think there's a half a dozen people are responding. And I keep asking, who is responding? And we get these same staff reports on the volunteers, and they show one firefighter, one captain responding or something, whatever. I never see any names. I've asked for it at least four or five times, the way that we used to have it, where we would see at least quarterly all of the volunteer firefighters by name, the number of calls they responded to, the number of training sessions they responded to. You don't see that anymore. And I think it would be very clear there's a reason why. It doesn't paint a very good picture. And I think that's why we're making this change. But I just don't think that it's the way to do this staff report and this particular move right now. So
could I just make one comment? I don't think since I've been a chief here I've ever tried to sugarcoat what's going on in that fire department. I've been before you complaining that we need personnel from day one, and you finally gave us staffing last year in conjunction with Oceano. And thank you very much for that. We still need help, you know. And you said, well, have you tried this? Have you tried that? Have you done different things? There's different programs out there. We're trying. But the way it's set up, we have to come before you each time we want to make a change, even if it's within the budget. So that's why we're before you. We're not here because we need help with this. We're here to get your blessing on it. And it's apples and oranges. If you're trying to look at a staff report and figure out what Cayucas is doing compared to Grover Beach. You've determined the level of service you want for Grover Beach by the amount of money that you've given us in our budget. That's what we're living with, and that's what we're trying to maneuver around, and that's why we're before you tonight saying maybe if we pay them this much money, maybe they'll start coming to more calls. That's what we need. We're responding to two cities here. It's not just little Grover Beach anymore. We're responding to about 20-some thousand or 30,000 people, and we're doing it with two people with about a 4 or 5 mile response or even longer than that from one extreme to the other. We need people to fill in behind. Maybe Cayucas doesn't. Maybe Pismo doesn't. Maybe whoever else is Templeton doesn't. But this suits Grover Beach's needs. And at no time have I ever tried to make the department look better than it actually is. At no time. You know, I bring it to you exactly the way I see it.
Steve.
Thank you.
Hey, just so we can get through the evening, a couple things. I'm not opposed to an incentive-based program at all. I think the chief's well within his rights to say, let us try this and see how it works. What I think, and John started to touch on it, was there's a large number of folks who are unable to make the commitment to training and call attendance because of job, family commitments, or what have you. Because of that, we have folks treating community residents and visitors to our community that might not have 75% of their drill attendance. They're not maximizing their training that the city is obligated to provide. That's a lie.
I guess when we had went to paid staffing, provisional staffing, the chief pretty much and a couple of the division chiefs or division captains, whatever they're called, basically came to us and said, hey, this is the only way you're going to get some people on the street. And this is the answer, thank you, et cetera, et cetera. And now we're back at square one again. We're still not getting the people on the street, and we are trying to manipulate things again. And I don't know if it's a situation that the fire service is just changing as time goes on, and we're kind of like a dinosaur. I know that Dave and Dee can reflect back when, and I'm sure Steve can too, because he was part of the volunteer fire department, when a majority of the people that belonged to the fire department were probably, I'd say, maybe 40% of them were in the age bracket of in the.
That doesn't. I'm not 50 now.
No, I'm just saying. I'm just saying we had an age bracket of 30 to 50 to 60 people, and 40% of those people were in that age bracket, and the fire department was a service that they were volunteering for the community, and now it's kind of changing where the members of the fire department really are young men that want to progress into the fire service, and this is a stepping stone, and the only way that they can really afford to do it is to be paid for it. And I also see something that kind of irritates me a little bit, and that's not a very good word, but I just say bothers me, because people many times say to me, well, you know, this is a job you took on, a city council person, and you need to do this and this and this. That's what you decided to do when you ran for city council. And so I guess I'm throwing it back to those firefighters that are volunteers. If you can't make 75% of drill and you can't make 25% of call, then why did you put your name on the list? You know, there's some commitment there, too. I mean, I really think that you have to look at it as a firefighter, and you have to look within yourself and say, hey, I volunteered to do this. It's still called a volunteer department, and we're trying to go to paid call. But there's, you know, that's been part of what this fire department and the fire department of the Rio Grande and Pismo Beach and Oceano have been for years. And if it's changing, then we need to call a spade a spade and say that there is a different definition. It's no longer volunteer, and as Steve said, but like I said, I think there is some commitment you make when you come onto a department. You say, I will be there 75% of the time for the drills. I'll be there for 25% of the call, or whatever the statistics are. And so I'm wondering where some of that's where that's gone too. And I don't know if you guys have the same feeling. I'd like to see this come back. We'd like to mull it over a little bit more also. And so it kind of sounds like that's a consensus. I'm not sure if that's...
Yeah, if I can jump in here just real
briefly. Go ahead.
Briefly.
Get me off the dais.
Well, I just want staff to understand, I think this council, we're just looking for the information, and I think what you're hearing this evening is, I know Councilmember Lieberman has stated, and I've stated, that I don't have a problem going to performance-based. However, there is information. The city manager touched on this earlier, is that we'd like to get more information before we make the decision. And so it's not a reflection that we don't support you. It's a matter of we need to get the base information so we can make what we feel is an informed decision. Remember, Eckbaum had referred to information we got this evening and the lack of Oceano's information being on there. So I think we should have a modified chart showing everyone with Grover Beach on there, and even some text if there are some nuances that we need to know about. I think that's what I'm looking for, and I don't know how the rest of the members feel.
Well, and I think that was part of the discussion too, because on this comparison chart, it doesn't really identify the other communities, whether they get paid for drill, they just get paid. It just identifies what their training says. Well, it does, I'm sorry. But I keep missing that little column over there. I'm sorry,
it
does.
Training.
Yeah, the one that says, well, it does say training sessions, and it says right on there. By gosh, I'm dyslexic. That's okay. I think we have to go to at least a monthly pay period if on that scenario, too. I think that the council's on a monthly pay period, and I don't think that doing that with the fire department would be a big, it's either monthly or every 3 months, quarterly or something like that. I think bi-monthly is kind of one of the stitch that Steve doesn't like about it, where someone maybe doesn't make as much drill as they need, would be kind of, I think, onerous on the person that didn't. The next month they might have to.
Let me ask Chief, perhaps, if it remained quarterly payments like it is now, is that in your mind any kind of a negative aspect to what you propose?
Maybe just a little bit. I mean, it's better to be paid a little more often than quarterly, but at least they'll be able to track themselves that they actually do have something coming at the end of the quarter.
Now, part of the situation now is that they need to make three-quarters of the drills over the three-month period, not three-quarters per month. So mm-hmm. if it were monthly compensation and the three-quarters of the drills were in there, does that get to a place that is more attractive then?
Yeah, that would be a lot better than quarterly. And for Steve, there is an answer to your question, but I don't have it. I mean,
right.
I know Lynn's watching this right now going, he knows the answer. But, you know, we're not paying people for something that they're not doing. I'll guarantee you that.
But. No, and I'm not questioning that, Chief. It was just I saw biweekly versus a quarterly tracker for training, and I just don't know how you do it. And if you go to monthly, well, obviously you're going to have folks that are doing really well in their training if you're going to change it to 75% per month versus a quarter, and mm-hmm. you may weed people out that can't make that commitment too. So right. I'm sorry, I'm not going to give you the answer because I don't know what the answer is, but I need the answer to be able to move forward on this.
Dave.
I like the monthly pay thing. I think that fits most of our – and encouraging more training is exactly what we want to do. And I don't blame people for not being paid for not liking to be paid more often than quarterly. Every 3 months is a long time to work on a job and not be reimbursed for it. I would like to see a list of the last quarter, the firefighters that were compensated and those that were not for the last quarter, to see how many people are not receiving a stipend because they did not make the training.
Supportive of why I think it's important for firefighters to respond to the station after the duty engine, the on-call engine's gone. And it's the two things. Chief's been telling us about the incident increasing of simultaneous calls. And also that on crew that may, or the on-duty crew may get there with two people. And they could have, it could be something as simple as a public assist, but the person could be very large in stature, and we don't want, I definitely wouldn't want to risk a back injury to help that person back into bed. So I think it's a good thing to have those folks there. I'll get off my soapbox.
I have to agree with you, Steve. I think you're so right. I'd sure want to know that if I dialed 911 that those guys would be there in a minute and stuff. So I support you. And I like the fact that you call it paid call staff. I like that.
Okay, where are we going? Are we going to...
Well, let
try
and focus us or move us along.
Exactly. Yes.
I'd like to make a motion that we continue this item to August 18th with directions to staff to provide the following information, a comparison chart that includes Grover Beach and Oceano, and further discussion of, the pros and cons of going monthly versus quarterly stipend, and finally, a list of volunteers that are making the required calls and training.
I have a motion.
I'll second that.
Motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion passes, so we will continue this until our next council meeting. Thank you,
Thank
Chief.
You.
We'll move into item number seven. Well, actually, we're going to item number seven, the approval of final plans of the West Grand Avenue Traffic Mitigation Project. We're going to carry that over to the Improvement Agency. So at this point, we're going to kind of strike that from the council agenda. And so we're going to move in council committee reports at this point. Dave, do you have any council committee reports?
No. Oh, I'm sorry, I do. We had a little ribbon cutting last week, last Friday, for the new SCAT buses. They're very proud of the new buses. They're beautiful. And ridership is up on our SCAT system. But we now have four new buses. I forgot the price, but it's $1.2 million or something like that. About 90% of it was paid for with grants. So
wow.
They're nice. They're just really
other,
nice.
Just other government money that was stolen and given back.
Stolen, yeah.
That's a grant.
Don't forget. We're using the folks in North Carolina.
As long as you feel good about it, Mayor.
Yes.
Okay, we're using the folks in North Carolina's money to buy our buses. I can get on with that.
Okay.
On board with that.
Steve?
Nothing at this time.
John?
I don't have any reports. Are you going to talk about the decision at South Stand? So I'll leave that for you.
Okay. Dee?
Yes, we had interviews for the Grover Beautiful, and we have selected three people.
Wow.
So I guess we'll be seeing them on the next meeting. Am I right, Donna? Matt? Mm-hmm. And it's nice to see Carol out there in the audience Welcome back to Grover.
She's excited. We can tell.
No, really.
I just had a couple comments on the Sanitation District meeting. We had a special meeting of the South San Luis Obispo Sanitation District last Wednesday to consider PISMO coming in, being part or being brought into the Sanitation District. Sanitation engineers that can basically want to respond to that and want to try and answer all the pros and cons of PISMO coming into the Sanitation District. So that project of that part of the staff work was proposed to be about $2,000, which PISMO will pay for that. Once they get the RFP back, then they'll decide whether they want to continue their adoption into the Sanitation District. Then we had another issue on the Sanitation District, and I don't know if the staff had gotten back to you, the Sanitation District staff, Ron, but the dump site near Le Sage Riviera that the state has is not very well maintained by the state, or it's not very well monitored. Let's put it, it's maintained all right, I guess. But there's a lot of dumping going on there that isn't really monitored. And so the sanitation staff was going to ask us if we could ask the state to move that site so that they actually have a staff person that will be able to monitor what goes in there. A year ago, they had a lot of cleaning solutions and some chemicals that went, I think it was about a year ago, that went into the dump site there. And those are very inappropriate and not good for the treatment plant. And now I guess the level of stuff that goes in there is really up. And so they have a real concern about what's happening there. So I think they're asking the state parks to either close it down or move it or be more in control of what happens there. So I know that was one thing that they had asked me to ask you about. Those are all that's all the things that I have with my council committee reports. City manager's agenda, we have none. City council agenda, number 8, consider canceling the regular city council meeting of September 15, 2003, or identify the content of the agenda. Anybody have any questions? Or we talked about this a little bit last mm-hmm. time. We had some suggested items, and I don't know. I didn't look at. Are they in here, or did we just kind of go
free?
No,
there wasn't any.
Okay. Can I turn the air on again? Boy, is it warm in here, or is it just me?
No, it's warm. It's warm now.
Man. It's hot flashes.
Hot air. Nice.
I had a suggestion.
Okay.
Just to get us off on the way. Something was written that I read the other day that hit me really between the eyes. I thought it was so appropriate. So true that I didn't realize it. And that was that we have a group here in town that we seem to be developing a we versus they attitude. And you can call it concerned citizens. Those are the people that we are supposed to represent, concerned citizens. And it seems like we're developing a antagonistic or you know, gets into some name-calling sometimes even. And I would like to see us have a town hall meeting where we can talk to everyone that has complaints, come in, let's talk about it, rather than have them here at the forum, the public communications forum, where they can say things, we can't respond. Let's try and work together. If we all truly have the best interest of Grover at heart, we're back, it's not productive, and if we are all truly concerned with Grover, we will work together to do what's right. If there's things that are just done to be antagonistic, I think that will come out too. But I think that a town hall meeting where we say, come on down, let's talk about it, and maybe we can ban lawyers from it or something. I don't care.
No.
You know, wouldn't that be fun?
I'll bet you'd break his heart if he couldn't come.
This comment really, it was recent, and I think we all read it. It's developing into a we versus thing, and when you think about it, those are the citizens that we're elected to represent. We're not here to represent staff. We're here to represent the community. And so if there's some way that we can get together and talk about things and perhaps be able to agree that on certain issues, not that we're going to resolve them, but we're going to say, well, you know, I know you don't, you want us to spend more on streets, but we've tripled what we've done, and this is all we can do, and we're spending down our reserves, and you have to give us credit. We've done the best we can. And I said, okay, well, maybe that's resolved that thing then. Or maybe there's some other issues. And the way we're going now, we're not able to respond back and forth, and we're just getting beat up all the time, and I think it's unfairly portrayed, whether it's in letters editor or news reports or maybe even on the cameras.
Well, and I don't think it's as professional as we want to be either, and I do apologize to being a little hard on John Weissong tonight. I don't think I feel I was a little snippy and I shouldn't have been. So, and that's what you're talking about.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. And it's a town hall meeting where we can all come down and talk about anything. Let's hear what your complaints are, and let's see what we can respond to, not in details or decisions, but, well, this is how I feel about it, and, well, this is how I feel about it. And why can't we do that? We have to be able to express our opinion sometime. So, now okay. I'll let the lawyer in here.
Okay.
I'm sorry. First of all, so I'm to understand that I don't have to show up in the next meeting. Is that?
That'd be my vote.
No.
Yeah.
Mickey Marty's money.
I'm taking bar exam next Friday.
We'll bring in Fred and
I'm Mo. Taking one tonight after this meeting.
I passed.
Perhaps. One way to be able to get to having an agenda item and to resolve kind of the mayor's issue would be my sense is that many of the times what happens is that folks have some information that is not necessarily complete information or accurate information, and they have drawn conclusions about that and have gotten some energy about that, and that that perhaps the session could deal with perhaps leveling or sharing information in a way that that gets some of those issues resolved just by having more accurate information out on the table.
Yeah, without solutions, but with back and forth conversation to say, no, that information you have is not right, and this is what it is, and that kind of thing. And
I think that, again, to accommodate both, and both of you are correct, that the council should not make decisions on items that are not on the agenda or deliberate items that are not on the agenda. And at the same time, we are empowered to have a session where a workshop, exchange of information, some type of a dialogue between the public can take place. And I think that Mr. Anderson's idea of having a agenda item which deals with either a public relation workshop or, you know, an informational workshop, community informational workshop, any one of those type of things will allow us to discuss, allow the council and the public to discuss basically any item that they bring before you. You can talk about it. Obviously, would be my advice not to make decisions or other than maybe direct staff to agendize certain items or bring certain information back. But it can be a shared exchange of ideas.
Can I throw something
out? Sure,
Steve. Just, you know, we talked during goal definition about improving media relations, and I did have an appointment scheduled today with the editor of the Times Press Recorder, but it had to be rescheduled. So I'm moving forward on that. I think Dave's got a great idea. I'm a little wary of it.
Yes.
But what if we called it and just made it completely casual and just hosted an open house? Your elected officials will be present, and we post it, we notice it. It's an open house. We'll be here, meet and greet, talk to us. We can make a decision. Do we want staff here? Are they more comfortable confronting us individually? And we all come back. We're going to interface with the public. If we see something that's of value, let's discuss it at an open council meeting and say, let's agendize this. But we won't take any action. We're just going to interact.
Can I jump in here, Mr. Mayor?
Sure. Sorry.
Yes, sir. I agree 100% with what Dave is saying, and that these concerned citizens have every right to obviously their opinion. And whether we agree or disagree with them, they should be treated with respect, and we should be professional and above all of the things that I'm seeing. So I think that's a great tact. But, or however, I think Councilman Lieberman, I think I like that idea. I think if we're talking about, let's have the workshop, let's make it casual, and it's sort of a mid-year report. Let's be positive and let's say, you know, here's what we've accomplished to date, and get that information out there in a positive manner, and then we're there to field the questions with the understanding that we're not making any decisions, but it's an exchange of information. And I think that I would rather do that than to feel like I need to go into a workshop and say, can we all just get along, those famous words. I think we need to be professional and understand that they have every right to their opinion, and we want to be positive, and we want to say, here's what we're doing, and to invite all the citizens of Grover Beach to come in and give us feedback. I think that's the tone that I would like to put on this.
Mm-hmm. Right. And very, there's certain issues, whether it's an employee hearing issue.
I don't think that what you're talking about is ever going to work, because I think Dave's idea is much better. I think if we're here, people are there. They want to come to the dais and they want to get some interaction going. I think that's, or to the podium, that's fine. But if we're walking around and you're talking to one person and then, you know, 15 minutes later I'm talking to somebody else, there's no, it's a round circle and it never gets back to what the.
That's a good point.
You don't get that one-on-one where everybody here has to answer John Wysong's question, or, you know, come to, or whoever. I'm just throwing his name out because I was rude to him tonight. But anyway, I think that one person that has a concern, if he has a chance to ask each and every one of us, or has some interaction with each one of us, and we solve that or come to a, you know, this is the best we can do solution, or we say, you know, we can't answer that tonight, we'll agendize that. That's something that we need to make a decision on. It needs to be five people. At least we can come to a consensus of an agenda. But I think if we're walking around having coffee or like a barbecue or those type of things, I don't think that that's going to work. I don't think we're going to, you know, because what Dave says to John or to Sally or Fred when I'm not there, you know, and it's, well, Dave said this, and you don't hear it, and you don't know if that's exactly what happened or if that's the exact wordage or, you know, that was the phrase that was there. So you don't know how to react to that. Whereas if it's an open forum like this, then we all hear what each one has to say, and we can all react to that or agree or disagree with it.
That's a great point. I think you know, it's a point well taken. We should follow that format. I think we need to have very clear expectations set forth to folks where every issue will not be taken forward as an agenda item, and maybe we have to be prepared to explain why, and maybe we need to, well, not maybe, we need to explain, you know, it goes to probably a council agenda, right? And then we decide as a group whether to agendize something in a public meeting. So if they want an answer tomorrow, it's not going to happen, but we'll make those decisions.
Can I say something?
Sure, Dee. I'm sorry.
Finally, I would just like to comment. You made the remark tonight, but also if we ourselves don't stand up for the rudeness and stuff that our employees put up with, other citizens are not going to know this either. They do not have to put up with that. And I think lots of times, too, what's put in the paper isn't always the truth. I'm sorry, fellas and ladies, but all the accurate information isn't always put in there. And so a lot of things that are said up here at the podium, we have not been able to respond to. A lot of things that have been written in the paper we have not been able to respond to, because we're not going to play that game. And that's what it is. It's nice to have your name in the paper when it's good. But I just don't think that tonight, the quote, the twin, that was not necessary. You know, and it's terrible that we as we're citizens too of this town, and we deal with other citizens that we represent time and time again. And I think, John, you call them your constituents that relate to you and tell you problems and how come
How come? A lot of people have asked me, how come?
By people in uniform?
Yeah, by people, yeah. But, you know, it's to get the people out of their homes where they're comfortable to come out and partake in this. It's, I don't know. But I'm not going to sit up here and be bashed either.
So this sounds like this is something we're getting to by consensus. Is that, John, are you on board with that? Or?
Yeah, just for clarification, we are trying to identify whether we are going to postpone the meeting of September 15th or establish content, correct? So I think what we're the direction we're heading in is a workshop, and we will sit up here from the dais. We will encourage members of the community to come down and participate. It will be a – so I would like to see a mid-year report where staff can say, you know, here are the council's goals, here's what we've accomplished to date. And then they would have an opportunity to ask any questions, and we can respond to the ones that we can, the ones that we can't. Martin, I think you're re-invited to the meeting. So that's kind of the way I guess I see it.
I would like to see a list where the streets that are going to be on the next phase have a list of those. These are the streets, folks, that we're going to be doing next. These are the lights that, besides tonight, that we are going to have. This is what Grover's going to look like, that kind of thing, an informational type of thing. Where are we to date in this project and that stuff? What is the building that's going to be over there off on Front Street? Do you know what it is? You know, a lot of people drive by. What's that going to be?
So that, a little community development. She's asking for like a community development show and tell or something, or... Well,
yeah, I think one thing that we need to remember is that we were considering canceling this meeting because of the concern that we wouldn't be able to do the staff work necessary to create the agenda items. And then we were looking at, well, maybe we would have different kinds of discussions. One of the things we talked about was the proactive code enforcement and having somebody come in and facilitate that kind of discussion. Now we're talking about a workshop, town hall meeting, and that's great. If we're talking about having a individual report, say from department heads, a 2 to 5 minute report about what have we done in the last year or so, what are we looking at doing over the next year, something that doesn't take a lot of extra effort to create that, I think that would be great. If you're looking for a detailed staff report and PowerPoint presentation and things like that, we may not be able to have the time to get that created.
I would say, in my opinion, I'm not talking about a detailed staff report. I think all the things you talk about is at least the vision that I have. And I think if we have an agenda, Councilman Lieberman touched on this earlier, we set clear expectations up front. We go through a section where all the department heads give a brief 2 to 5 minute report. We have an opportunity for members of this community to express their concerns, and those that we can respond to, we will, and those that we can't, we need to be real clear as to why we can't. And I think if we go down that road, we can be productive, and we can, you know, I can't begin to tell you how many people I hear on the street say we've been watching, you know, public access TV. And I think that's an opportunity just to share the information. Mm-hmm. So that they know that we are trying to do the things we promised when we ran and got elected. But we're also giving people an opportunity to come in and express concerns. And if they've got ideas, give us those ideas. It's an exchange of information. So, you know, I think at least that's the way I'd like to see it go.
Would the agenda item then be simply a workshop to address public concerns, or would it be a public relationship workshop? What would be your preference?
I would just call it a town hall meeting, and here's some of the issues we hope to share, some of the information we hope to share with you, and then gather feedback or your
don't
thoughts.
Don't you have to have it listed?
Oh, sorry?
Don't we have to have it listed?
We should at least have a some overriding theme. If it's going to be a town hall meeting, it should have a theme to it, so we can talk about. So basically, so we can be comfortable in discussing anything that is brought up without being concerned that it wasn't on the agenda.
Well, if we made this the first of a series of town hall meetings, people are going to understand what the theme is. The theme is, here's our status on our goals, and we want to hear from you.
My greater concern at this point, at least with my question, is that the wording of the agenda item itself. I understand that the public will come in and they will have an opportunity to talk to you about the things of their concern, but for the purpose of the Brown Act, I want to make sure that I understand what it is the council's wish that the agenda says.
What about a goal status or something worded along those lines? Here's our goals and here's where we are.
Everything you wanted to know about City Hall.
How about
will we show them the secret ballot?
State of the city.
We'll state our goals, and you ask us your questions.
Yeah. Why don't we call it?
Was entitled to know.
So why don't we call it State of the City and Citizen Input?
Yeah. See, you flipped it completely. I want to hear what their thoughts are. Right. You're trying to tell them what we've done and what we're thinking.
Well, and I'm kind of like you, Dave. I think that
town hall meeting is. Tell us what's right. Tell us what's wrong.
Okay.
I agree, Dave. I think we'd rather have.
I'm not trying to boast. I'm just trying to share information. When I'm walking the streets, people ask me questions, and I think it's valuable information that they're seeking. However, if the council majority doesn't want to go along that route, that's fine by me. And maybe we ought to consider canceling this meeting or having a regular meeting. I don't want to sit up here wasting taxpayer dollars. We're sitting here going around in circles, chasing our tails. So if someone make a motion and let's get to a decision.
Well, I think
I the state of the city.
Yeah. I like the Dave's aspect of just having an open round table, and if there aren't enough questions to fulfill a whole meeting, then maybe we can do something that you're talking about, John, where we say, okay, now that you've had your concerns, would you like to hear what we've done and what our goals are, and maybe that's But I think the major thing is to hear what people in the community, what their concerns are, what questions they have of us.
Okay, we will.
Okay. Yep, then
just don't call it public relations. It has psychological connotations.
If I just read that title on an agenda, it would tell me that you're going to do a propaganda thing and tell me what you're working on in the city.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like
a town hall meeting is come and exchange input, ideas, or complaints. That's all it is.
How about just information exchange?
I think we're talking.
Right. Why don't we just let Dave work with Martin and something you're comfortable with?
It isn't my meeting.
Okay, can we
move? Well, how about everything you want to know about City Hall? Is there something wrong with that?
Come talk to the council.
And are legally entitled to know?
Yeah, right. Bring your questions and.
Seriously.
Well, it has to be understood that there's certain things that it's not public information.
Okay, you guys, why don't you guys come up with something? We have a couple meetings before that anyway, so if we don't like your idea, I guess we can always
beat it to death. Our votes.
Just like we are tonight, we can beat it to death.
Can I have some Novocaine after that? Some pulling teeth.
You want it between the ears or? Okay. Public communication. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes on any item not on the agenda. In compliance with the Grant Brown Act, the council cannot make any decisions. So, Susan.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Susan Zelschuk, Assistant Community Development Director, and I'll stick to my 3 minutes. I just wanted to make a couple plugs for some items coming up in community development. Wanted to re-invite the public, if anyone is interested out there, in participating on our Planning Commission. We still have an open seat. It's an exciting job. You get to tackle interesting issues like our upcoming special meeting of the City Council and Planning Commission. On Tuesday, August 26th, we're going to hold the first Circulation Element Update public workshop. And that will be presented by the traffic consultants, and they'll be presenting an overview of the transportation-related issues of the Circulation Element Update. Also wanted to note that the Traffic and Noise Committee meets on Wednesday, the 27th of August, and some of the issues that were brought up at their previous meeting related to truck routes and things like that will be discussed at this public workshop.
What was the date on that circulation element, Susan?
That is Tuesday, August 26th.
Great, thank you.
And the time for that is 6 p.m. versus the standard time of 6:30. It's a busy night for the consultant, so okay. We're starting a little bit earlier.
Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Anybody else? Seeing nobody, we'll come right into council communications. Steve.
I'm going to pass out some photos from my vacation. If you could pass those down, please.
If you were in Rotary, that'd be fine.
But I'm not. basically, and I staff has a copy, and I've got a copy to put up on the AGP monitor. We were down in North San Diego County for about a week, and we were driving down, they call it Highway 101. It's pretty much Highway 1. And found this gateway to this little beach city called Encinitas. And when you look at it, it's got palm trees. It's got light standards similar to what we may be looking at. And what was that? Grand. And then we could do another one at the Highway 1 gateway. So I just really like it. I wasn't on the council then. And I just wanted to share that because I think this is a great way to differentiate who we are and where we begin and end.
Yeah, but where are the bulb outs and the block crosswalk?
That's a pretty busy street.
So is Grand Avenue. Anybody else that has council communications?
No, I'd just like to comment to commend Councilmember Lieberman on this photo. I think one of our goals is to try and identify our downtown and improve our identity. And so any ideas or suggestions are definitely something that we should look at.
Dave? D?
Yeah, I just want to, well, never mind. That is not Ron's parking lot out there. That, too, was brought up when we had this
say,
thing
I
came
have a
up.
Parking lot?
Let it go.
Cool.
Let it go.
Yeah.
It's a special district. Congratulations.
Let it go.
Okay.
Okay.
That's nice, Steve. Thanks.
At this point, we're going to close this meeting of the Grover Beach City Council, and we're going to move into the Grover Beach Improvement Agency. And let's see. Can we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Mayor, first of all, we probably should adjourn the meeting because we need to come back and announce the closed session items after the agency meeting. And then the next meeting will be a joint meeting of the City Council and the Improvement Agency.
Yeah, that's what I just said. Roll call, please.
Here.
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 Vice Chair
Santos?
Here.
Mayor
Chair Marley? I think I'm here. I'm not sure. Okay, here. Public communications this time. This is the time for the Grover Beach Improvement Agency public communications. So anybody that would like to speak to this body at this time for a period not to exceed 3 minutes, now's your time. Seeing nobody, we'll move into business item number one, which is approval of the final plans of West Grand Avenue Traffic Mitigation Project. And our staff report will be by Bill? I don't know. Oh, Bill Farrell, yes. Got so many agendas here, I don't know which one I'm looking on.
Mayor, members of the council, thank you very much. I was not at the April 21st meeting when you discussed this before, but tried to contribute a little of this just by helping with the staff report. Basically, at your meeting, you received your made a review of the conceptual plan.
Excuse us, Bill.
I have a conflict.
Could you excuse us for a second? Sorry about that.
Oh, I'm out of line.
That better?
Thank
yeah.
you.
Okay.
Should we make it known okay. first? Should we make it known that Ron stepped down because he has a conflict of interest?
Territorial conflict.
Okay. Okay, I think we're
Sorry.
Ready now.
Good. Sorry about that.
All right. Start again. On April 21st, you looked at the conceptual plans for West Grand Avenue, and the council gave a number of specific directions after hearing public comments, directions as to adjustments, modifications to the plan, approve the plans, and to authorize release of the bid package. And that would be taken out to bid, and it would be brought back to you, of course, when the bids are completed, to look at those bids. Just a note about the financing. The financing for the project that is available for the construction phase is roughly $950,000 at this point. The engineer's estimated cost for the project is about $1 million. $1 million, $5,000. So the construction monies appear to be a little bit short, but then again, we haven't received the bids yet. So when we get the bids back, hopefully we'll have some bids that come in within the funds that the city has. There are some of the items that constitute that $1 million price tag are optional items, so there are some adjustments that you could make at that point. And there's a number of options that you have to address the funding when we get to that point with the bid packages. Returning to the modifications that staff has been working on, Jim Gehring is here this evening, and as Gehring and Taylor has taken responsibility for preparation of the basic layout of the site, and Jim would like to take a few minutes and review those adjustments with you, and feel free to keep that informal and ask him questions during his presentation. Richard Webb of TPG Engineering is also here this evening. He came over from Visalia to be sure that we were able to respond to any detailed questions that you have. TPG did the traffic engineering part of it, the intersection items, and also the bike lanes. And Susan Zaleschuk, the Assistant Community Development Director, worked with you before and is prepared to respond to the modifications in the street furniture. And so that's what we have this evening, and I hope you will dive right in and ask them to clarify points as we go along. Jim, are you the first one to...
Mayor Pro Tem, members of the council, good evening. Jim Gehring, city engineer. I'd like to just briefly review some of the aspects of the project other than the street furniture, pedestrian lighting, and landscaping. One of the things the council asked us to do at your last review of this project was to include bike lanes for the project. And the layout that you see on the screen does include bike lanes, and not just in the block between 9th and 10th. It turns out that because we are going to be installing signals or signal modifications at four intersections, among those modifications will be new traffic detector loops. And because we wanted the detector loops to be in the right place to begin with, the restriping of the street to include bike lanes actually will begin a half block west of 8th Street and end a half block east of 11th Street. So the bike lanes will continue clear through the entire length of the project. In order to accommodate bike lanes on this project, we had to narrow up some of the other features. And that meant that because the bike lanes each consume, one of the things that the council was interested in last time was putting in embossed concrete in the median noses instead of landscaping because of the narrow condition. And we've since looked into that and believe that installation of pavers to match the proposed crosswalk pavers would be a good fit there and be about equal in expense. So that's a modification that's occurred. And of course, the mid-block crossing has been deleted. At the 10th Street intersection, you'll recall that the council asked that the design of the 10th Street signal be included, and it is included as an option so that the council, at the time we receive bids, can decide whether or not to accept that aspect of the contract, assuming that there's funding, you may, and if you choose not to, then it's easily deleted. On the other hand, though, the conduits under the street at 10th Street are part of the base contract, so that even if it turns out that the signal itself is unaffordable, we would still intend to put the conduits in to minimize street disruption at the time the construction goes, so that we don't have to tear up the street again when you actually do find funding for that signal. Those are the essence of the engineering changes on the project, and if you have questions for me, I'll be happy to answer them now or turn it over to Susan.
Can I ask questions?
Questions.
Jim, you had mentioned you went down to, what, 10.5-foot travel lanes?
Yes.
And in going down to that narrow travel lane, were there any issues? Will they still function properly?
They will function properly. They are within the minimum standards. In fact, they are above the minimum standard for width for this particular condition by only 0.5 foot. And they will also have the effect of slowing traffic to some degree.
Okay. That's the only question I have.
Okay. Steve?
Thank you. Jim, you had mentioned that the bike lanes were going to extend 0.5 block either direction. Does that mean that they're going to terminate mid-block? The striping for those bike lanes?
Yes. At some point, we have to conform the striping with the bike lanes to the striping without the bike lanes. And the way TPG has laid it out, it seems logical on the plans, is that it terminates, or they terminate at 0.5 block.
So it's going to look better terminating at 0.5 block than carrying it all the way down to the next corner? I don't know. Just I'm trying to... register on that.
Well, it is a question of where you stop and how far do you go. Maybe
right.
Clear to the beach and all the way to the city limits. But
right. No, I understand we have to stop somewhere, but mid-block versus taking it the remaining 0.5 block.
Right. And maybe that's a question that Richard Webb would be better to answer because they did do that layout.
Okay. Let me ask you one more question.
All right.
And maybe we can get some background on that one. I mean, I'm excited to see this project move forward. How does our striping plan line up with what Arroyo Grande is doing now? We had talked about that at some point. We're going to need to match it up. Is there any idea?
I don't really know because this striping plan terminates several blocks to the west.
Sure. But do we know if we decide to continue at some future time to continue toward? Thanks.
Any more, Steve?
I'm just hoping that I get a little bit more on the bike lanes, but go ahead.
Okay, Dave.
Jim, I had one, and I agree with Steve. I'd love to see this going forward. The idea of extending the bike lanes several blocks brings up the question, why don't you extend the travel lanes also 2 or 3 blocks each way? The long-term goal is to have a median down farther. Why couldn't you have it all lined up now, even up to, I don't care, 13th Street, 12th Street, somewhere, where the center turn lane is just wider, but the streets line up exactly, the travel lanes line up exactly right with this one block area, plus the bike lanes line up. Why not do it now? And
that
if
is
it
the
does
way
slow that traffic, why not? That's a good thing.
That is the way the lanes are lined up now between, on the plans, between 0.5 block west of 8th to 0.5 block east of 11th. Beyond those limits is a question of funding.
Of striping?
Of, yes, funding the effort.
How expensive can it be to restripe a street?
But you and I want to knock it out one Saturday?
Yeah, we can do that.
Get a little roller and just roll.
You're straight and narrow.
My dad's an engineer.
Ron's
so anyway, the point was, why not... even if there isn't a median there, it could be a wider center turn lane, whatever, but the street traffic lanes would line up and traffic would slow all the way along.
This may not answer your question, but at least gives you more information. The engineer's estimate for the signage, striping, and pavement markings for this project is $40,000.
Wow. Signage, striping, and what?
Pavement markings. Pavement. That's all the markings that are on the street.
Well, I would think it would really be a good idea to extend the lanes as far as you could all at the same time, rather than narrow it down just the block before. The bike lanes are going several blocks, but apparently the striping will weave in closer together as you get to this 9th to 10th block.
Certainly our history on these various projects has been to extend the project, if the funding permits, on the fly. And we've done that in the past, and if that occurs this time, we actually do end up with extra money, and the council wishes to go in that direction. That is a direction we could go.
I thought it would be from a traffic engineer's point, a great solution. Rather than weave in and out of lanes, why not extend the same travel lanes, the same straight lines? I'm through. He's on.
Madam Mayor, what one option might be, and asking the city engineer, when we have to restripe Grand Avenue anyway for maintenance purposes, could we not then go with the new striping plan at some point in the future then?
We can. There are some extra costs because the old striping does not underlie the new striping, so we have to sandblast off the old striping. But it's certainly, you're right, Mr. Anderson, we could.
I'm just going to talk about light fixtures, but I can jump right into landscaping. The issue of the median landscaping came up at the last meeting where we discussed this, and we came up with a plant palette that included Mediterranean species. And for just the median plantings, we suggested the fruitless olive trees, that you can prune them in a manner that's very ornamental. You can have uplighting with little white lights and all of that. And then the canopy can be pruned to a certain shape. You can make it very sculpted. And that passed Public Works muster. When it came, and I wanted to also note that we discussed different types of native trees for the median, trees that would be, you know, more inherent around this area, and even palm trees. But the palm trees got nixed right out. The native trees, oak trees are more erratic in their growth, the way they grow, and could be difficult for trucks passing under them and a variety of other problems. Mm-hmm. Bay trees, you know, the different trees that we suggested wouldn't work for this location. Then the street tree issue did come up, and currently out on the street you have New Zealand Christmas trees, which do not look like a Christmas tree. They're actually similar to, they are, the trees that are in the parking lot right out here that have kind of a bark that peels off, similar to eucalyptus, sort of, with a little bit of a flower now and then. So those are some of the existing trees out on West Grand Avenue. There are also magnolia trees used liberally around this area and some up and down Grand. And then there's also carrotwood trees, which they're used as street trees, but I don't think they do very well in this climate. Those are the trees you see out there that look thinner and don't have the canopy, the lushness, the green, and they tear up the sidewalk just as much as anything else. And I would like to also just make a quick point. A lot of folks like the green, lush trees in downtown San Luis Obispo and how attractive they are. But point of fact, those trees are actually prohibited from being replaced once they die because they tear up the sidewalk so bad. So finding a perfect street tree that provides canopy, that's attractive, that's lush, that doesn't tear up the sidewalk is a real challenge. And there is no perfect street tree anywhere.
What are the ones in the Pacific Grove? Pacific they have Grove. All the little lights and stuff.
Oh, next to Monterey?
Yeah.
I can certainly find out. Those might be olive.
They're sure they pretty.
Might be. Yeah.
I can check Pacific Grove. They have parking in the middle of their street, too.
Yes, they do.
We're not discussing parking.
But the magnolia trees, they do drop litter. There is no tree that doesn't drop litter, mm-hmm. that leaf litter. And so that's, you know, if you don't prefer those trees and there's something else, we can certainly work with that. Street trees aren't really part of the median planting. We can select street trees separately from this meeting. It's not a major issue. But these were some suggestions, was to keep the magnolia and the New Zealand Christmas tree. Were there other trees you've decided that you like, or?
No, I like the suggestions that you've come back with.
Okay.
For myself.
Okay. And staff from Gehring Taylor and Associates and I did large safety illumination, basically. They're attractive. They're decorative only. That doesn't show too well, I guess.
Can you put some paper?
The manufacturer of the light posts were not able to provide us colored renditions of the
Maybe we turn the lights down.
The post fixture. Mm-hmm. But I just want to point out, this is the fixture that you didn't like. And now that you've got it in focus, we can take it off.
Right.
provided a couple other alternatives because that lamp.
Too glassy.
Technical glitch. The light fixture, not fixture, the lamp post that we're showing in this photograph is what staff would recommend in that it picks up some of the design characteristics of the lamp portion and fits in basically with kind of a coastal beach community. But it's not overly ornate and frilly the way perhaps a historical lamp feature. I found out this is very complex. There's zillions of cut sheets and books and, oh my gosh, of different lamp fixtures. And just for comparison, this one was a bit more ornate, and all of these are all in the same general price range too, but felt that this was not as conducive to the coastal character that we have here, or that we're trying to create. There was direction to look at the lamp fixtures and posts that are in Avila at the beach. I went out there and looked at them, and they actually chose the lamp fixtures and poles that were installed in Avila are this fixture right here, this blue one. It's very simple pole. It's not ornate. The fixture itself looked a little bit more utilitarian versus beachy. It's nautical, but more like on a pier. Mm-hmm. And the post with the thin stainless steel strip didn't seem substantial enough to us. So with that, we're suggesting, it's hard going from one technology to another, from the overheads to the, if only we had a color copier. We are suggesting this pole, which we felt would be conducive with the lamp fixture that was previously brought forward. And I believe the council, you did like the previous lamp fixture, which was, this is a close-up of that same fixture, a little bit more substantial. Hard to see arm. The whole pole would be green, and this is what was shown on the previous rendering. I do have other cut sheets of other lamp fixtures. If this one isn't your cup of tea, we can change that. But I proposed with that. The council didn't care for the chair and trash bin in black. That green to match the existing trash enclosures between 9th and 10th were what was supported. So we didn't change this. This is actually a pretty attractive bench. It's hard to see in this picture. It's, if not the same, very similar to the benches in downtown San Luis Obispo. And as far as the color scheme, there was support for the green street furniture and lamp fixtures. Oh, thank you. And those would be installed just in this block area. There's similar the exact same trash enclosures in other areas up and down Grand, but they're black. So the green signifies downtown. I guess that's the theme or the plan.
Now, I noticed in San Luis that a lot of those benches, they have plaques and that. Will people be able to do that?
We can certainly develop. We've talked about that, developing a program to provide opportunities for people to pay for a bench, buy a bench, and then have a plaque memorializing a loved one or something like that on them, certainly. I don't think we need to touch on. Do you have any questions?
I should have jumped in sooner on the lighting fixtures. What's the height of the fixture?
15 feet.
About 15, so it's not very high. And right. We don't anticipate there being any problems with glare or anything like that.
No.
Okay. And I know you were pouring through the specs, and this may be too detailed for this evening, but did this fixture or this style of fixture come with cutoffs if we get to that point that we would need to go back in and figure out a way to shield the light downward so it's not into motorist eyes.
Oh. That didn't come up. Jim, do you have any information on that?
That's as far down as any of them come.
Okay. That's as far down as any of them come.
Okay. Because, yeah, I just have a concern. I know that in dealing with lighting fixtures, when you've got that bulb, there tends to be a glow if it's – and I don't know if you can go with
There's a lot of options. This is just from the same distributor.
Are you talking about the lighting intensity?
Well, I think you can address it through the lighting intensity if you can't direct the lighting better. I think, but that's a detail that you can work out. I just wanted to ask that question.
I think, too, the lumens aren't going to be as strong as, say, the regular street lamps.
These
will be similar to down in Arroyo Grande Village, the street lamps that they have out there.
Great. That answers my question.
Okay. So do you like the plan? Do these work?
Steve, you have some questions out to bid.
Don't try to close this deal too fast.
Give her points for trying. I like that.
Yeah. Susan, how many existing light fixtures are in that block? Do you guys have them on the map?
I think they are on there. I think there's about three. This is adding 8 light fixtures, 4 for each side.
The existing street lights?
Let's see.
There's no way I can read that drawing. 4?
4 on each side.
Councilman, I'm curious, which ones are you interested in seeing first?
I just want to know the existing street lights are.
There's one there. One there.
Okay, so that's what that icon is.
One there. One there.
I think that was it, 4.
3. Okay, thank you. The last question on the pole itself, will we be able to hang the banners, seasonal banners, or is there a bracket assembly that you can purchase that?
They're typically attached to the pole itself versus the fixture. They're below the lamps.
Okay.
So we'd have to just find a good spot below them. We could also attach them to the overhead street lamps.
Right.
If you wanted to.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay.
Dave, do you have any questions?
Nope. It's perfect.
Dave's excited.
I was just thinking when Steve brought up about the banners, maybe you might want to check and see if there is an option, a possibility of that.
Sure.
Okay.
Because I know the banner over here on 8th Street, the flag would usually cover signal light, that stuff. Mm. So, anybody else have any questions of staff? Does anybody in the audience?
Oh, they weren't going to make presentation?
They drove all the way here. You got up to your spot.
Yeah.
They just came to the coast for the weather, really.
Mayor Pro Tem and members of the council, greetings. I don't know if this is going to show, but I might answer a couple of the questions that I heard come up. Let's see if this will. This is the plan here. All right. I'll point out one thing. We were. Thank you. We were talking about whether the bike paths actually extend past. And what the situation is, this is the last block. 8th is right here. City Hall would be right down this street. The bike path goes along on this side. At this point, it becomes a dashed line, and then it actually does not continue to the west. What continues is this is a tapered part of the lane striping that brings the narrow traffic lanes back into conformance with the wider traffic lanes that are to the west.
Okay.
And it would be a mirror image of this as we would go down to the east end. Regarding your question as to whether this could be continued all the way, let's say, to the west or further to the east, it would be the same thing that Jim said. you would have to remove the existing striping and then add the new in. The only real expense you would come into is when you would get down to where there would be an existing traffic signal that would have loops, and then you wouldn't want to go into that area because then you would have to change those loops, and that would be very expensive. The one other point that I'm not sure you had caught on.
Mid-block crossing. That was a little joke. That was a little
oh,
joke.
Oh, right. Yeah. It went away.
I'm so glad to see that gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, traffic-wise, that was probably a very good decision.
Okay.
If there's nothing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience that has any questions of this project? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to council. Sure.
I'd like to commend staff on the staff report and your presentation this evening. I think it was thorough, and I think it was put in a positive manner, and I just wanted to give you praise on that. I'm excited about this project, as I believe council members Ekbaum and Lieberman mentioned earlier, and I think that and Mayor Pro Tem Santos. Did you mention that earlier? I know you're in support of it. Anyway, I am definitely in support of it, and I like the changes that were made. Susan, thanks for looking at the trees. I think you're exactly right. There's no perfect street tree, and I think you've come up with a really good solution. So with that, I definitely would support this project. I'm going to make a motion.
You were tracking, and then you stopped.
I wanted to give you guys a chance to talk. So I move that we authorize release of the bid package as described in this report, subject to the council's decision on the preferred street furniture. I believe we are in agreement that what was brought before the council this evening is what we would support as far as street furniture and the agency. Yes. Thank you.
I'd like to second that motion.
Okay. There's been a motion and second. Let's have a roll call vote.
Yes.
Yes.
Council and Board Member Ekmont?
Yes.
Mayor and Chair Santos?
Yes. Okay. I guess we can call in.
Call in Ronnie.
Yeah. He's coming. Thank you. Thank you, Bill.
This fast meeting, it's now 9:15.
Yeah. I want to bring something up before we close into the...
Huh?
I want to bring something up before...
No.
Yeah. No. Did you guys hear the fireworks this weekend?
They fell on my roof.
Oh. Yeah. And I want to ask Thomas.
They went that far?
Before we adjourn.
I
want to bring up something.
No, you aimed them at my house.
Those are mortars.
Okay, so we're going to join this portion of the council meeting.
Yeah, we're going back to the council meeting.
Okay, we're going to adjourn the Grover Beach Improvement Agency and go back to the council meeting because I think Dee wanted to make a comment. Right.
Yeah. Maybe, Officer Thomas, you can give us some insight about the fireworks this weekend. A little disturbing.
Was that Saturday night?
Honorable Mayor, City Council. Obviously, since the 4th of July, some people have just tended to forget that it's no longer the 4th of July, and they're continuing to celebrate. Most likely, it seems to be in the northwest area of the city. The officers have been out on bike patrol at night. Primarily on the weekends, we have issued several citations. There is a order placed for a new motorcycle, and it's my understanding, and it should be here in about 14 to 21 days by the time they get it all outfitted and we go get it. It's coming from Northern California, so hopefully we should have that by the end of the month, I'm hoping.
Great. Well, it's nice to know that. It's nice to see the officer on the bike out in that because I think I've had people call me about the fireworks, and it is very disturbing with the animals, and I think Steve said one landed on his house and stuff, so I think we should just put a little bit more teeth in it and say, you know, enough's enough.
Wait, surprisingly, it seems to be the older residents that are doing this, not the kids.
Who should know better.
That's the problem. Who should know better? And unfortunately, it's those type that spoil it for the rest of us.
Mayor, perhaps Lieutenant Thomas could explain what the ordinance allows us so that the viewers can get a better idea.
Well, the fireworks ordinance only allows the use of safe and sane fireworks during its prescribed period of time, which is normally several days before the 4th of July up to, I believe, midnight on the 4th of July, mm-hmm. a little bit after. We give them a little bit of a leeway after that. I'm not looking at 1201 to be writing tickets. Safe and sane is the ones that don't jump up in the air. You can't shoot to the bottle rockets, the firecrackers, the Roman candles, the motor tubes, those type of things. After the 4th of July, any firework, safe and sane are the illegal ones, the ones you get in Mexico or Arizona or our neighboring states, are illegal, and you will be issued a citation. If we catch you, or at minimum, we're going to confiscate your stuff, and it will be turned over to the fire department for destruction.
Fire department is launching.
Yeah.
For destruction. I don't know how they destroy them, but they do destroy them. It's an undisclosed location.
Thank you.
Anything else? Any other council communications? Okay, at this point, we will close this council meeting and move into a closed session. And we're going to deal with five different items. In closed session one will be conference with labor negotiation, and the employees that will be represented will be the SEIU, or general employees. Number two would be conference with labor negotiation, and the represented employees of the management and confidential employees. Number three is conference with labor negotiator, and would be the represented employees will be the executive management. Number four is conference with legal counsel pending litigation pursuant to the code of ethics in the matter of termination of Todd Miller. Number five is public employee evaluation and the employee being evaluated by the city manager. Closed session announcement will be made next meeting at the beginning of the normal meeting of the Grover Beach Chamber. Grover Beach City Council. With that, we will stand adjourned.